Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
It is my great pleasure to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Sheila Carapico, Professor of Political Science and International Studies at the University of Richmond in Richmond, Virginia. Sheila Carapico, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Nice to be talking with you.
It's great to have you on here. You have been writing some excellent articles about Yemen, which is a small country but a confusing topic to many Americans. You had an article in The Nation magazine this month called A Call to Resist Saudi, and then in parentheses, and U.S. Aggression in Yemen. Let's maybe start with Saudi Arabia. Is Saudi Arabia an ally of the United States? What kind of a country is it?
Well, it's not technically an ally, but we generally, I mean, John Kerry and the president and others refer to it as a close friend. It's, of course, an absolute monarchy, which is very wealthy, so in some ways most of its citizens are very comfortable, but they also have very few civil liberties or civil rights, particularly women, but also liberals. And dissidents. I mean, there are no elections. The judicial system is prone to cutting off heads. So it's an absolute monarchy with very that you wouldn't think that the United States would want as a close friend.
Cutting off heads sounds like a human rights record of ISIS, which the United States launches wars over. Not the case with Saudi Arabia, I guess.
No, not at all. I mean, there has been, and I mentioned this in the Nation piece, I mean, it's decades and decades of a strong friendship, which is based kind of on the exchange of oil for weapons. So Saudi Arabia pays cash for the most sophisticated weapons from the largest American arms manufacturers and also British and to some extent German and French arms manufacturers. And that relationship is lucrative on both sides and has been, you know, a major factor in the American military involvement in Iraq and now, of course, also in Yemen.
This always strikes me as odd that the vast majority of the weapons in that region of the globe come from the United States, but we think of that region of the globe as inherently violent in the extreme. What is the U.S. role in the level of violence that we're seeing?
Well, the United States actively participates in the level of violence. I mean, there's increasing evidence. And it's also logical, that the beginnings of what we call ISIS or ISIL were in the American invasion and occupation of Iraq in 2003, which, of course, was very misguided. Not only were the pretext of weapons of mass destruction subsequently proven to be false, but led to chaos in Iraq, which has now spread to the rest of the region. Logically, providing weapons on such a large scale makes it easier and more attractive for various parties to continue fighting and not to negotiate.
What about the role of a U.S. drone war in Yemen? I mean, for years now, since President Obama became president, we've heard about U.S. missile strikes and missiles from drones in Yemen, and people have been saying, well, this is a better kind of war than another kind of war, as if some type of war was simply required. And we've seen Yemenis, including the young man Fareh al-Muslimi, testifying before Congress that this is counterproductive, you're making heroes out of terrorists and so forth, not to mention killing innocent people and traumatizing innocent people. But President Obama has talked about it as a success up to at least maybe a year ago. And now, is it a success or has it in fact contributed to a wider war?
Well, it certainly contributed to the delegitimation of the recently deposed President Hadi, because it was widely resented by large segments of the population, who have no sympathy, by the way, for Al-Qaeda. But, of course, not everyone who was killed by the drone strikes was a member of Al-Qaeda. And you can imagine any country in the world would resent having a foreign government, you know, doing constant surveillance, which is part of what the drones do, and then periodically shooting a Hellfire missile at a Toyota full of people, some of whom are terrorists and some of whom are just coming back from the market. So it that American policy has not, I wouldn't call it the major factor, but it certainly is a factor in Yemen's descent now into complete chaos.
Yeah, I spoke at an event in Richmond, in fact, together with a young woman from Yemen who showed a picture she'd taken of a little boy cowering under a desk. And she said, this is how the children react when the drones fly over and their parents won't even send them out to school because of the drones. And I showed her a picture from the 1950s of U.S. students hiding under their desks from Soviet nuclear bombs. And it looked exactly the same. And she talked about traumatization and fear and increased violence rather than the drone strikes somehow bringing peace and democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I myself have sometimes, a few times, been in situations where there's gunfire or weapons falling from the sky. But the drones, from all accounts, including the two that you mentioned, Farah al-Muslimi, and I guess that was either Rooj or Atiyaf al-Wazir that you were talking to.
Yes, exactly. In fact, it was Atiyaf.
Atiyaf. You know, all accounts are that the drones will be overhead sometimes for, you know, part of a day and sometimes for much of the day, for a week or more, and you can hear them. And it's very disquieting to know that there's something overhead that might at any moment, you know, fire a Hellfire missile. So that is, I think, something that Americans have difficulty appreciating, just how terrifying that is, particularly for young children.
Absolutely, something we need to keep in mind. We're speaking with Sheila Carapico from the University of Richmond, professor of political science and international studies. So you've written also about the background over the decades of the situation here. What has been the relationship of Saudi Arabia to this smaller country on the peninsula there in Yemen?
It isn't actually smaller in population. It's smaller in area, but Yemen, Saudi population figures are hard to come by, but Yemen, there are at least as many Yemenis as there are Saudis. So it's not that small, but it is relatively much poorer. It's an agricultural country rather than a major oil producer. And the Saudi monarchy, dating back from the 30s when they annexed some historically Yemeni territory, through the 1960s when they tried to counter the revolutions in both South Yemen, which was an anti-imperial revolution against British colonialism, and in the North, where it was a secular kind of free officers type of so-called revolution against the last Zaydi imam. Until more recently, when the Saudis have interfered by sending subsidies to politicians and also missionaries preaching the Salafi or Wahhabi brand of Islam. I mean, Saudi Arabia meddles incessantly in Yemeni politics in a way which consistently attempts to thwart any move towards democracy or decent governance.
And there have been some attempts to move in that direction over the past 4 years or so, right?
There was a major uprising in Yemen in 2011, part of what we in English call the Arab Spring. and the Yemenis began protesting in much the same way as Tunisians and Egyptians did, but their protests lasted very much longer. It was months and months and months on end when people were camped in the public squares in Sana'a and many other major cities and smaller towns, demanding the resignation of Ali Abdullah Saleh, which eventually did happen, but not really because of the protests so much as because the Saudi kingdom and the other monarchies of the Arabian Peninsula, who are all wealthy countries, pressured him to relinquish the presidency, but in exchange for a really kind of sweet deal where he had immunity, he remained in the country, he remained the head of the largest party, and power was transferred to his appointed vice president in a one-man election that was kind of hastily arranged. So once again, I mean, I think many Yemenis, certainly the youth protesters among the Yemenis, which was a very, very large group, considered that this was an effort to prevent rather than to facilitate a transition to social justice and democracy.
And what did they do wrong, if anything? How did such a powerful movement end up not winning something?
Well, none of the youth uprisings have won anything so far. Maybe in Tunisia,
right?
But certainly not in Egypt. Certainly not in Syria. Certainly not in Libya. In Yemen, it was a better experiment than some because there was a tradition, or at least a legacy in Yemen, of something called a national dialogue. And among the protesters, there was an effort to get another national dialogue going. But that got sort of co-opted by the monarchies of the peninsula under the aegis of the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC. Also backed by the UN and Western powers, of course, notably the United States, that started this national dialogue process, but very much kind of tutored by the Gulf Cooperation Council initiative, so-called, was tutored by international experts. So, for instance, they brought in experts on federalism, which was not really one of the demands at all of the protesters, and ended up, for one thing, it went on inconclusively. Hadi's mandate as president was intended for 2 years, but that ended in 2014, and yet he remained. So the whole thing ended up kind of inconclusively until the recent outbreak of fighting between this group called the Houthis and the increasingly illegitimate government of President Hadi.
So what is the story of these groups and these different sects and interests and communities that are involved in this struggle now? And what is the actual role, if any, of Iran, which we hear fear-mongered quite a bit in the U.S. media?
Well, the Houthis began in like 2004, protesting against their own marginalization and ill treatment and lack of development in the area that they live, which is the province of Sada that's near the Saudi border. And they were also agitated by the presence there in their territory of one in particular, a very large Saudi-funded Salafi institute, which was both proselytizing a very different form of Islam than what the Zaydis believe in or what is indigenous to Yemen, and also engaging in military training. So the Houthis, it's actually a family initially, the Al-Houthi family, staged a protest in Sana'a, in the capital, in 2004, which was put down with force, and then they went back to their home territory, and the government launched the first of what are referred to as wars, the first of six wars, One of those, Saudi Arabia, intervened in 2009. And the government was never quite able to defeat this, what otherwise would be kind of a remote sort of ragtag group. During most of this time, there was really no evidence at all of Iranian involvement of any kind. I mean, it was sometimes alleged by Saudi Arabia, but, you know, a lot of reporters and researchers attempted to find actual evidence of any material Iranian support and couldn't find it. Then these were among the many, many groups, not all of which are sectarian at all, that joined the popular uprising. They were among the many groups that became increasingly frustrated when there never was a real political transition, but just a stalemate and, you know, kind of endless dialogue. And then last summer, it was almost seemed like such a kind of minor incident in a way, but the World Bank had been, and other donors had been pressing the government to lift fuel subsidies, which are very important to many Yemeni families' incomes, because which is in like micro transport, so it's very small trucks, and then also agriculture, both rely on fuel. Fuel had been subsidized, the fuel subsidies were lifted, and the Houthis staged a protest, which, you know, had a certain amount of popular backing outside of their group. And then that, again, was met with force. And then the Houthis started fighting back. And then they started, you know, kind of marching from their northern stronghold south, confronting various groups along the way. But the army, by December, did not defend the president. They just kind of backed off. And so they were able to take over the Capitol. And the president, Hadi, who, again, his term had actually technically expired, but he escaped to Aden, which is the former South Yemen, where he's from. And I guess he thought that he would have a base of support there, but he really didn't, because in a completely different set of conflicts, the Southerners have been trying to re-separate, redeclare their separate sovereignty, so they didn't welcome him either. And then recently he fled to Saudi Arabia and asked the Saudis to launch a bombing campaign against the Houthis, which is interesting, of course, because the Houthis are also enemies of Al-Qaeda, and you would think that the Saudis would be busier trying to defeat Al-Qaeda than they are the Houthis, but now it's really a big mess.
possibly the third war, if we can distinguish one from another, in which the U.S. is on the Al-Qaeda side. Quite mm-hmm. confusing mm-hmm. to U.S. war supporters. Where I know that there's been a U.N. resolution. Where, if anywhere, is the United Nations in all of this, and where should it be?
Well, Jordan, so in the current campaign, the Saudis have tried to get a coalition which includes the other members of the Gulf Cooperation Council, so the oil monarchies, and then Egypt and Jordan and Morocco, and Pakistan was invited but has asked not to be included. Yesterday, or it's up for a vote today, Jordan has made a resolution to the United Nations Security Council, which basically blames the Houthis for everything and calls on them, to, in effect, calls for their unconditional surrender. It would be, and it's lopsided. It reminds me a bit of when there is Israeli bombardment of Lebanon or Gaza because of Hezbollah in Lebanon or Hamas in Gaza, and the position of the United States is that it's the fault of Hezbollah or Hamas. So in this case, I mean, what the United Nations Security Council ought to be doing is calling first for a temporary ceasefire on humanitarian grounds to let medicine and food come in, to let people get dead bodies out of the streets and so forth. And then the United Nations needs to, or is, you know, has the responsibility to call for an actual cessation of warfare. But instead, what they're doing is not calling on the Saudis to stop their bombardment, but only calling on the Houthis to lay down their arms. It's not clear, actually. I mean, Russia may veto it. I can't believe that I've ever found myself on the side of Putin's Russia on any issue whatsoever, but I hope that they do, because this is not a resolution which is worthy of the UN Security Council.
Well, I agreed with Putin's Russia on not sending missile strikes into Syria in 2013 and various other U.S. military initiatives. I should note that when we say the word today, we are having this conversation on Tuesday, April 14th. So what is the state of the suffering? What is the humanitarian crisis to the extent that we can know it under the bombing of Yemeni U.S. weapons using Saudi U.S. weapons at this point?
Well, we know that hundreds have been killed, although it's difficult to get exact numbers. We know that food and medicine are running very short. We've heard reports from the humanitarian groups like Doctors Without Borders and other organizations that have, in particular, medical personnel on the ground, that they're trying to work in hospitals that are out of water, out of electricity, and out of medicine. We have reports, particularly in Aden, of dead bodies in the streets that cannot be buried properly, frankly, because of both the Houthis and the Saudis. But the Saudis, having, of course, the vast air superiority, have closed all the airports and all the major seaports, the proper seaports. And then in addition, I mean, we were talking about the terror of having a drone overhead, but what now children are living with is the terror of having bombs. And for, 10 or 12 nights in a row, there were pictures from Sana'a and other places of, looked like a volcano lighting up the night sky, and the sounds are terrifying. It's a very grave humanitarian crisis, both in terms of people who are actually being killed and injured, and in terms of, the vast majority of people who are being terrorized and who don't have the opportunity to get water or other basic necessities of life. Seems from the major cities, most people have left, gone out to villages or someplace which is less likely to be bombed. So there are, tens or I think more than 100,000 internally displaced people. People in an ironic turnaround. It used to be that Somalis would flee to Yemen because you can do that on a very small boat. Now refugees are going from Yemen to Somalia.
What is the goal that the Saudis and their U.S. arms suppliers have in mind? I mean, do they think that this bombing campaign will be the one after so many failures in Iraq and Libya and all around that region to bring peace and stability? Or what do they envision for Yemen's future? And what do you imagine might be Yemen's future?
The Saudis say, and the U.S., again, more or less officials like Kerry and Ashton Carter also say, that the objective is to restore Hadi as the legitimate president of Yemen. I mean, that's just not going to happen, because what he did was he fled the capital to another city, and then he fled to Saudi Arabia and called on a foreign power to bomb his country. He is not going to be accepted back as the leader. He wasn't particularly, even his own army wasn't defending him before this started, before he left the country. And it's not going to happen now. More generally, I think the Saudis are trying, they're trying to flex their muscles. They haven't done anything in Syria or in other situations, but they're trying to show that they can, bully a very weak and impoverished neighbor. And their base, I think their the only way to state their goal that makes a modicum of sense is that they want to be in control of who governs Yemen. But it's I mean, the likelihood of it working is very slim indeed, as we've seen in American wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and also the intervention in Libya. I mean, none of those has created, as you say, stability. To the contrary, it's created chaos, and that appears to be the outcome that we're looking at now.
I wanted to mention, we're getting low on time, that people can sign a petition on this issue at DIY, which stands for do it yourself, diy.rootsaction.org, and people in the Washington, D.C. area on Wednesday, the 15th, can go to the newest Busboys and Poets to hear activists from Yemen, including Rouge and Atiyaf al-Wazir, we mentioned briefly earlier. Sheila Karapiko, what we have a couple minutes left. What can people do who care about this situation and want to put an end to warfare?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that supporting those groups, there's one also with the same Atiyaf and Rouge al-Wazir. There's a Kafaya war, enough war campaign. But, I mean, I think we can try to inform the general public, and in particular, of course, decision makers in Washington, although I think it's going to be difficult to get them to listen, but we can try calling for first a humanitarian ceasefire, temporary, and then for a diplomatic solution, not dictated by the Saudis, but coordinated by neutral parties. Many people have mentioned Oman as the country in the peninsula that is more or less neutral in this fight. Other countries, I mean, I don't want to pick them out, but, you know, like Canada or Sweden or someplace, I mean, there needs to be a serious diplomatic effort combined with now, of course, an emergency humanitarian effort.
Well, we will have to press that on the U.S. government in every way we can, and other governments stepping up will be much appreciated. And your work on this is much appreciated. Sheila Karapiko is a professor of political science and international studies at the University of Richmond, and we will have links to some of her articles up at talknationradio.org. Sheila, thanks very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Nice talking to you.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. There is a petition to Saudi Arabia opposing its war on Yemen at diy.rootsaction.org. I'm just back from a great event in Detroit, Michigan. See davidswanson.org. I look forward to seeing you all in Baltimore on the 18th and Houston on the 25th, New Jersey at the UNAC convention on May 8th, in New York City at Left Forum on May 30th, and all the way in August the 27th in Chicago. Hope to see you there. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.